Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss, Brothers Wiss. The Brothers Wiss. The Brothers.
You're now listening to Greg. It's the
Brothers
Wiss.
This is Greg with the Brothers Wiss number 81. What is this? Late January 2019? What do you know? You're not supposed to date these things, right? Because all the information we say is it lasts forever. It never gets stale. This is Greg from Texas, the motherland. Over here to the left, you've got the far left. You've got Miller from VA. You're supposed to say words.
Words.
There you go. Words with friends. There you go. Below us, we've got Mikey from Chicagoland.
Hey, how's it going?
Si, senor. All right, let's do the thing really fast. We've got some international patrons that join, so get ready for me to butcher this. We've got one person who I'm not sure who they are. It's Jay Nineman. I think they're from Rodeo TV, though. They haven't really popped up and said anything yet. And then here's the interesting one. All right.
Yeah, I have no idea.
I think it's Bostian Kade or something very close to that. Please correct us. Correct me. I know nobody else gave it a swing. Also, we have George Ashley and Isaac Olson. Thank you guys for joining the Patreon, which gets you access to the Slack, which half of this information actually comes from. So the Slack is a great resource. Sorry, Dave is texting me. He's too lazy to join the call. So I'm not even worried about him. It's the area where you can throw any kind of questions, comments in there, and smart guys like these two right here, these two geniuses, will answer your queries. What do you guys think about that?
I think I ask more questions than anybody else, so maybe I'm not the smart guy.
Well, I like to think you already know the answer. You're just trying to test us so that you can call us out.
Leading us to the correct answer by querying us.
Yeah, you want us to think
nonstop.
That, we figured it out. That's what it was.
Oh, our idea.
Yeah. Oh. All right, so let's jump right into it. Miller made his first post in, what was it, Mike? 936 days or something?
Yeah, it was, I forgot what it was, but yeah, it was a very long time. I did actually figure out the number of days. Probably scrolled. 976 days.
Oh, it's even worse. And so, man, I'm looking at it, and it's
I did three posts.
Oh, did you?
Yeah, there was the Observium ones first that you missed. Because I was trying to figure out how to reset the dashboard after upgrading the latest version, because they went to this dynamic dashboard thing, and there's a little script that they have that converts the old dashboard to the new dashboard, and they deprecated everything that was in the old one. So you can run this thing again, and it'll regenerate it from scratch if you screw it up, which I obviously did. So, I was looking for that, and there was a couple other tips that I found, like showing the config and stuff like that. So anything I find on the mailing list that's super interesting, I'll put on there. And then the other one was for Open Media Vaults. A couple of things on there that pop up when you do apt-get updates and stuff. There's some garbage output and some cron jobs that give garbage output. So, you know.
For the audience, Observium is what?
It is a NMS, much like Liberty NMS, because Liberty was a branch off of it. Fork.
You say Libre?
Say.
I always say
Libre.
I say Libre because it makes it sound Libre? Like kind of Latin.
It's, and it's spicy. Isn't it Latin for free or something? Free NMS?
I don't know.
Isn't that what it's supposed to be?
I don't know.
Just Nacho Libre. Libre NMS. I mean, that's how I always came to that. Yeah, but so it's an NMS, and I've got it integrated with Rancid and SmokePing, and so I add one thing, and then, you know, it adds it into SmokePing and Rancid all at the same time. And also, I can do some DevOps stuff from the groups that I create dynamically in there. So all firewalls, if I want to change all the passwords on those, I can dynamically use the API out of Observium to pull that up and commands.
That's pretty using front deck. So when you add something in Observium that pops into Rancid, what's Rancid?
Rancid's it's a much like Unimus. It is a backup tool. It's pretty old and I would say crickety It's a bunch of expect scripts cobbled together by a bunch of people, I think. Backup Cisco stuff, and there's a little bit of Microtech support, and I hacked together some Allied Telesis supports for some of the switches we had, and here's David. Hi, David.
Hey, what's up, man?
Hey, I'm doing good. So that's Rants in a nutshell, and then SmokePing is a latency management tool, so you can monitor a latency and graph it, which is very helpful.
So. And its graphs are very... they tell a lot of information, and yet they're very simplistic to look at.
Yeah. So I like to do the stack graphs on those too. So if you monitor more things, you can stack them all together and have it all together. So one of my ideas that I've never really implemented was like doing a trace route and then generating from all the IP addresses, all of those graphs, and then making an aggregated graph out of all those. And then running that for a while, but I've just never gotten around to doing that. So
it sounds like it'd be awesome to look at and a bitch to make it work.
SmokePing is kind of a bitch to make it work. It can be a pain in the ass. I wish someone would write a new front end to it because it's all CGI. We just need a PHP front end for it to show all that stuff. It'd be a lot better. Or anything else.
So SmokePing, it's like a program that runs on a server that's doing ping and looking for latency and stuff, right? You don't have like a piece of client software at the far side, does it?
No, it doesn't. But you can have remote SmokePing polling devices, which can be remote, like on a Raspberry Pi or something. But it does more than just ping. You can, for Visp, I set it up to do radius requests. So it would... do radius requests every minute or something. So I was measuring the response time to actually give an accept or reject for all the way through the radius process and graphing that latency for them so they could tune their hyper radius platform.
That's pretty cool. So, have you ever tried the IPSLA stuff built into Cisco routers?
Cisco?
Yeah.
I have not, but I have heard that you've done a blog post many moons ago on that.
Yeah, it was a long time ago. I like it because it actually, and you can use, I mean, the cheapest pile of eBay crap routers nowadays. I mean, you can get like 831s or something that use almost no power. And that actually runs a client at the far side, and then one side's designated the server. So, I mean, there's really rich communication between the two that's
tracking. Has anyone like reverse engineered that and made an open source IPSLA product that you can run on different servers?
I remember Googling for it a long time ago, and
that'd be a pretty cool thing.
I remember I tried, also ran it on GNS3 at one point just to try it out, but it kind of ran crappy.
Well, if you could run it on GNS3, you could probably run it on Proxmox or something like that.
So that'd be cool. That'd be cool. I can't imagine why somebody hasn't created an equivalent to that. Because I have some cacti scripts that pop in there, and
there was that vaping product too, which I wanted to look at, which was a SmokePing like alternative. No. And Open Media Vault, the other thing I posted on is a NAS product, like the open source NAS, kind of like FreeNAS. I guess one of the guys from FreeNAS broke off and had some difference of opinions and started Open Media Vault, so.
That doesn't happen on the internet, does it?
Never. So, Open Media Vault's pretty cool. I like it.
Is that what you're using for your Plex?
Yeah. I do use it for the Plex. And if I had to redo it again, I'd probably use Proxmox. Just because Proxmox has so many cool little features. Open Media Vault does have a really good community, a lot of good support. And I've been able to fix all the issues that I've run into. Supports ZFS on Linux pretty well.
Sweet action.
Cool.
We're saying a lot of acronyms. So ZFS is what?
It's a file system. The last file system you'll ever need.
Is that right?
Yeah. There's difference of opinions on file systems. There's a BART file system. BTRFS, and there's ZFS, and there's...
What about Ceph? What's that? How does that fit in the picture?
I just set up a Ceph cluster.
How's it working? How's it working, by the way?
It's going good. I'm getting ready to add a fourth host to it, because I got all the hardware coming in on Monday, and I'm waiting on the 10-gig quad port NIC cards to come in. But I set it up on just gig networking on a Microtech switch, and it works you could run it just like that. It is a little slow, but it does work. Ceph is basically a distributed system where it stores objects. So if you have like a VM that you run and you have a disk image of that VM, it splits that up into little objects, and then it spreads it across drives in groups, and you tell it how many times you want it to spread across how many drives and what pools you want and stuff. So it ends up distributing your content across all these drives on one machine, another machine, and another machine. All the machines in the cluster basically get at least one to however many copies you want. And that allows it to, basically you can pull a drive out and it'll rebuild it automatically, redistribute the objects all around.
The big advantage, I mean, you could do that with any RAID system, just pull out a drive and slap in a bigger one. Sorry, I have a cold, so I sound a little funny. But the big advantage I found with Ceph was that you could scale it as big as you want. Yeah. So you could just keep adding servers and servers and servers and just more drives and more drives, and it'll just keep getting bigger without having to reconfigure anything.
Right. The idea with RAID is you add the drives in there, right? And this can be spread across lots of servers, correct?
I have three servers with 12 drives each, and it's spread across all three right now. I'm getting ready to add a fourth one with 12 drives. And like David said, you can add it, but there is a little bit of config you have to do. You have to up the number of page groups that you have so that it'll spread more evenly across everything, and that's
about
it.
It's not like you have to rebuild a RAID back in the day when you had like your central storage. Like if you wanted to increase that, it wasn't that easy.
Yeah,
if you really wanted to go big, but Ceph is just
ZFS ZRAID one or two, expanding that, making that bigger can be very difficult.
Yeah.
Basically, can't really do it right now.
So what are you storing? I mean, you said you're about to be four servers with 12 drives in each one. What's the storage for?
That's for work, for all the VMs we run.
Bullshit, that's for porn.
No, that's
the porn VMs, duh. Where do you think he works?
That's the P in Plex stands for porn. Right? So
what does the L and E and the X stand for?
Don't even start. Don't get me started.
Lovely experiences. But yeah, so it's just VMs for us, our Unbound and our IPAM and Observium and a bunch of UniFi controllers that we run and kind of thing.
Anything and everything, man.
Yeah.
Ceph is awesome.
That's cool.
I couldn't get it to work properly. I had 15 drives and maybe I screwed something up, but like my third node, it would constantly show as having a Ceph problem. So I thought it was the controller. I'm like, because how can every drive in that server show us having error? All right, it must be the controller. Got a totally new controller and same exact problem. So I said, let me put this off to the side for now and let me use what I know works pretty easily. So I give you kudos for setting it up out of the box and having it work well. You said you had how many drives per server?
12.
Okay, yeah. I 12, was doing
12 4 terabyte drives, and then I have two 256 SSDs mirrored for the boot volumes.
Yeah. So what I did was I had 5 drives per server because I had Dell R610s.
Yeah.
I had 3 of them, and I know that you need a minimum of 15 drives for Ceph to really start working well.
Yeah.
Theoretically, you could use less, but from what everybody in the forum said and what Nick was telling me was that, 15 is the minimum. So I went out and got 15. I'm going to die. So anyway, so shit. What is that line from The Exorcist where they tried to get the devil out?
the power of Christ compels you.
There you go. Yeah. Let me cough out the devil. Cool. So yeah, kudos to you, man. And by the way, I will attest to Smoke Ping. I still take a look at it on your server. Justin set up Smoke Ping for me and a couple of my customers a while back. It's still running strong. And in one screen, you could pretty much see everything I need to see. Being that I do VoIP, latency is a big thing for me to, to be able to graph and look at. And I used to use Zabbix for it, but he showed me Smoke Ping, and it's way easier to see a whole lot of different types of, latency data packet loss, jitter, and latency. You could see that all in one graph with the smoke ping. And they call it smoke ping, I guess, is because wherever you see the gray stuff, the smoke, that is that's jitter, right?
That's where the fire's at, yeah.
Yeah, okay. Cool. So, yeah, that was pretty good, too. Justin's a really good resource for all that stuff.
Yeah, the other thing that you could do that would benefit you, David, is a remote smoke ping on the West Coast and remote smoke ping on the East Coast, and then combine the two graphs together, and then you can see which side of the network would of, you know, your infrastructure could hit a particular client the best, that kind of stuff.
That's a great idea. Actually, I'm working on something right now, which I will be talking about in the few next Brother Wisps, which basically I'm going to be putting a server in, I'd say to start, three different locations in America. But here's the difference from how mine is set up right now is that customers are going to be able to, the phone will automatically pick which server it has the best connection to. So not only will it be a failover, but it's also going to be best connection or best, whichever server has the best connection. I don't know what you might call that. But yeah, that's coming up.
So you're doing like Anycast on that? So you're just announcing the same IP space all over the place, or?
No, not like that. It's just each server is going to have its own IP. It's not like we're doing any crazy BGP stuff, because even that takes convergence times. And once you start messing with BGP, it affects all the customers on that server. Whereas opposed to, like, for example, like one of the biggest problems that I guess any VoIP provider would experience on the internet, or any time-sensitive provider would experience, is that the internet's not a perfect place. Even though internet protocols have a lot of error correction built in, like TCP, even UDP has like built-in error correction if you miss some packets. But where am I going with this? I am so sick. I can't even make sense of what I'm making sense of.
Yeah, you tell me.
As he eats his whatever. But yeah, so, man, the amount
just start chewing every time he starts talking.
Yeah. Crunch, crunch, crunch.
These are my Haribo Star Mints. It's basically like
hipster
like
mints?
A half inch cube of toothpaste is what it tastes like. They're delicious. They are so strong. Like, people can't stand to talk to you. Your breath is like so minty strong. They're nice.
Oh, that's what you're blaming it on.
Oh yeah. Hey, I never heard any complaints out of you.
Nice.
What were you talking about? Well, yeah, you were talking about mechanisms for improvement over the internet.
Oh, yes.
I've employed some forward-looking systems on my networks where it actually samples out all the internet peers to like the top 1,000 destinations. It also gives you the ability to say if you've got VoIP services out there, you can put those IPs in there and it'll constantly sample, find the best one, and sort of shift traffic over to that guy. And it's pretty cool.
That's if you're hosting data center clients. I'm kind of like the reverse. All my clients are all over the internet and they're coming in to one spot, whereas opposed to you're trying to find the best paths out. Does that kind of sound like what you were talking about?
Yeah, in my scenario, you'd have to put like the customer endpoint IPs in there and have it optimize those specifically. It goes by volume of traffic, and so your VoIP stuff's never going to be in the top 1,000, you know, because those VoIP conversations are what, like 32-64k a piece or something?
Yeah,
88 if you're using EULA.
There you go. So they're nothing. They're going to be so insignificant, they would never really be a contender for optimization.
Got it.
Can you force it to optimize that?
It does everything IP-based. So you can't really tell it, hey, look for RTP or look for SIP-specific traffic. Unless you wanted to manually. If you knew their endpoints manually, you could put those in there. So I guess
that's pretty cool.
You could probably set up a DNS name for each endpoint, right? Even if it was dynamic and then it was sort of resampled to it as it like did a DNS query lookup on it if it changed.
Who coded that system? That sounds like some customized, really amazing stuff.
Yeah, it's pretty neat stuff. I'll tell you about it.
There's like three or four systems that do.
Yeah, the smile.
That do that.
Yeah, there's some that are expensive. So you've got like Noxion. And then there was a data center group that made one. I can't remember what they're called. You remember off the top of your head, Mikey?
Internap.
Yeah,
Internap. Had one.
I think Internap sued Noxion, didn't they? Because they sort of ripped them off. The company I use is out of Europe, so I think they just skirt everybody's laws. They don't care.
At the way back in the day, Route Science was a, I think Cisco maybe bought Route Science. I'm not sure on that. But yeah, there's a few companies that do similar things.
Yeah.
Different, but similar.
So are you running, like, because I know, Dave, you put routers out at your customer sites most of the time, right? So are you running a script on the router that's looking for which one to optimize? Or, I mean, how are you doing that?
Or is no, that actually, built into the phone? Yeah, the phone will, when on boot up, there's several different ways to do it. And we're still exploring which way is going to be the best because, for example, DNSSRV is what everybody knows, right? You list all the servers that the phone should check against, and you have priorities for each server, and then whichever server the phone will have the best connection to is the one it'll connect to.
Oh, nice.
That's fine and dandy, but the problem with that is that you're also telling the hackers, here's a list of my servers, go attack. You know, so like DNSSRV in theory sounds really good, and it's really simple. But again, on the security side, you're literally telling hackers where all your servers are. So we're looking at other alternative ways of doing exactly what DNSSRV does that is built into every phone that comes out there. And we're still experimenting with different things. So those are the bigger plans for the future.
What if you registered a different domain name and put the DNS server record under that, and then in your authoritative servers that you host, only allow DNS queries from the host names that you put on your remote endpoints at those offices that have phones?
You're a smart little shit, aren't you?
Well, I'm curious, well, to the DNSSRV record. Is that a standard record that every domain you could theoretically query and it'll return something?
Yeah.
Yes.
It's like an A record. It's just another type of record, like text.
Yeah.
Well, because there's also, like an A record, you have to know what the entry is you're looking for before it's going to return anything, right? So is that...
Yeah, but for SRV is just you specify a list in DNS. Yes, it is a standard record. And you specify a list of servers and you give them weights and priorities. And then it's, think of it like an MX record, right?
Record, yeah.
Yeah, all think right.
So it's just standardized.
Just so you get the idea. It's not exactly the same, but you have priorities. And what you were saying, Justin, is kind of clever because that's one way I handle, because I already have three locations, but each server is its own entity in three different data centers in America. So nothing happens automatic. And I'm not a huge fan of things happening automatically, but I'm kind of moving over to that train of thought and to those techniques, because as you get bigger, and I've gotten to the point where I need to do something where things happen automatically, basically, without me having to look over them. Yeah. So the way I'll do it sometimes now is I'd say like 90% of my customers have MikroTiks, and I would go into the MikroTik and create a DNS entry under IP DNS and create a static DNS entry, which of course will override any DNS query that it looks up. First, it's going to look at its local database. So I make Greg is looking like he's a little confused. You get what I'm saying, man?
No. I make notes as I go. That's what I'm doing.
Dang. All right, cool. So so I create a static entry in the MikroTik that forces all the phones in that particular location to go out to whichever server I want. And that's how I'll do it if I need to change things on a fly. It happens, I'd say, once every quarter. Once every, 3 months, I would have to, level 3 has a crap route, as they always do. And I'll have to somehow find a route to one of the other servers that doesn't go through that crap level 3 route. So that's kind of the trick I do now. But yeah, I'm going to be going over to something that's automatic. And I'll talk about that in the upcoming future. not going to say anything yet because we're still testing, we're still gathering data, I'm still learning more about that type of technology. And the end result will just be, customer experience will, I won't say it won't be better, but the management overhead of having these customers will be less, which will allow me to do other things that I would like to do.
Fair enough.
Amen.
So you're saying you're going to have an improved quality of life from it?
Yes. I don't know, improved quality of life, because the more extra time I have, the more things I find to fill it with. Like, for example, right now. Yeah. I mean, and Justin, you know, and Greg, you know, and Mike, you know, that like once you have, I mean, we're thinkers. And when you're a thinker and a tinkerer, you try to find something that can make something better. So, I mean, right now with the extra time I have, I'm taking a giant training course for the next week. Won't mention anything about that until it's over. And it's literally early morning till late night, nonstop. We get an hour lunch break. So I'm going to be pretty busy with that. Aside from that, I'm also going to be I'm doing my Microtech speech, which, by the way, why is my speech the only one listed on the MUM agenda?
Because nobody else has signed up yet.
Wow, that's unusual.
That's cool. I can't wait to hear how your Amway meeting goes next week.
Amway?
or I don't know. What is it? What else could it be? Let's see. It's got to be something. Are you going to start selling Herbalife? I could see multi-level marketing in your future.
No, it's directly related to what I do.
You could be.
I'll tell you what. I'll tell you what. I'll make you a deal. When you come out with what you're doing, this big secret thing that you're doing for the past, I don't know how long. Look, Mike, his face just went totally like serious.
No, he didn't.
I know you got something huge coming out. I can't wait to hear what it is.
No, it's huge.
Huge.
And it's a soft H on that word.
I'm going to die. All right.
Let's keep trucking. So, Mike, I saw you noted that AT&T is going to start charging for RFOs. That's request for outage. So if you ever have a circuit go down and you want to know why, you ask for an RFO or an RCA root cause analysis. And so AT&T actually has the gall to start billing you for that. Is that correct?
Yeah, that came across Nanog, and apparently multiple people confirmed that they've had, you know, requests for billing information billing stuff when they've asked for that. So that's a good way to piss off your customers.
Yeah,
have insane. An outage and then charge them to tell them why.
Yeah,
I was just going to ask, what does that accomplish?
Well, if you get an RFO, usually you can apply that against your SLA, your service level agreement with a carrier, right? So if you you can only have X amount of downtime or blah, blah, blah.
Yep.
For various reasons. Yeah. So that's ironic, you know, that
they're trying to break even.
Yeah. I was going to say they're exactly, going to charge you for the thing where you're going to try and get, you know, billing forgiven. But you know what? I'm wondering if it's sort of that model where they say, hey, if you call us and we have a problem, we're happy to come out and repair it. But if there's nothing wrong, we're going to bill you for it. Maybe it's the same sort of thing. They're trying to deter people from calling and reporting there's a problem when there's not actually a problem.
Yeah, it's your own fault that it's down, not theirs, and they're going to tell you and bill you for it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Some of the better vendors I've seen will actually post it on their website when there is an actual outage and updates all along the way until it's fixed. I mean, I don't know why that's so hard.
So not CenturyLink.
Well, obviously, yeah. Actually, wait, no. I do get updates about CenturyLink. I've seen updates about CenturyLink fiber cuts. And that was posted on my vendor's website, or the portal, let me say. So I have seen those. Don't know.
Yeah, I've seen before where a vendor will have an outage and you try and get to their website or call at their call center and that's actually down. So
yeah, they'll state it right there in the message, which is kind of smart.
If you get a message and it's not just busy signal.
Oh,
yeah.
Snap.
We've had that before with level 3, like when they're having a phone outage, like a nationwide. It's like everything sort of stops.
Yeah, that's why I moved everything off of level 3. I hate them.
Which is interesting because for toll-free... So for regular phone numbers on the PSTN, there is no real redundancy. It just, it goes from this switch to the tandem switch, bam, bam, bam. Now, once you get to the IP, now you can do redundancy, but, you know, on PSTN, there's no such thing as, you know, multi-homing.
That's right.
Toll-free numbers, you can. You can multi-home a toll-free number. So why these companies don't do that, you know, because you can assign multiple rest boards on a, on toll-free. So for something as important as, you know, a telecom carrier's support line, you would think they'd put that at multiple, you know, on their own, and then, you know, shit hits the fan, somebody else's. Apparently not.
Maybe we should just do nothing but order toll-frees. How about that?
You know what I've always, it's always perplexed me is if you, and I'm guessing a lot of the folks listening to this probably have done VoIP in the past. If your provider has an outage, I think, Dave, you said this before, there is no such thing as BGP for phone numbers, right? So if it goes down, you're just up shit's creek. And I always wondered, why is that? I'm assuming, like Mike was saying, maybe legacy holdover, right, from old systems, and that's sort of the way that, but think about your cell phone. I mean, you can roam tower to tower across North America, and it follows you around. Why haven't we applied this to kind of PSTN lines? Or you know, like SIP services. You know, I don't care about cranky lines anymore. But
cranky old men.
Well, I was wondering, is it a limitation, a functional limitation of kind of the underlying system whereby carriers interconnect with each other? Or, I don't know enough about that.
Isn't, like, there's something called the SS7 for cell phones, like between SS7 carriers? And,
but yeah, that's adapting old technology to new technology. That's, I don't even know.
Probably,
if that's
it might be probably why. I don't know.
I don't know about voice.
I don't either.
Like, you know, SS7 and, like, you know, all the other underlying, you know, PSTN protocols have no capability for that, and nobody wants to change it. It's like, you know, get off my lawn. This is staying the way it is because this is how it's supposed to be.
It works well enough.
Like, you know, like, you know, well, yeah, phone until, guys versus data guys. It's just a bunch, you know.
What? I mean, do you think that they're looking at it like this is a dead technology and we're just not going to put any more money or investment into it?
I don't think cell phones are dead.
Well, the idea of getting SIP connections into a PBX sort of thing.
I'd say, like, some guys, yes. Some guys, it's the, you know, get off my lawn. You know, this is the way it's supposed to be. Stop messing with it.
Well, think of it like this way. Let's look at it from this way. Like DNS right now. You have Anycast DNS, but let's say that provider goes down. Right? What happens?
Like if the person hosting your DNS server goes down?
No, not the DNS server, but the actual authoritative. Yeah, I guess the authoritative registrar.
Are we getting into DNS flag day that's coming up? You know what that is? Heard about that? Yeah. DNS flag day. I guess no one posted about it in flag channel here.
Well, Miller, you could be that somebody.
I will be that someone. God.
Cool. But like, yeah, with DNS, if like the authoritative systems go down, what do you do?
Oh, like if a root server tanks?
Yeah. What do you do?
Well, I mean, don't they have like those root servers?
Anycast.
Yeah, in multiple places. But if all of it went down at once?
Well, no. No, but I'm saying, like, let's say, for example, who the hell do I host with? Like, EasyDNS. Even though they're Anycasted, if EasyDNS's systems go down, no one's going to resolve my domain.
Okay.
Right?
Well,
so then how do you do that? So, look, I'm sure things are possible. Look, in today's world, with the technology that we have, not that it's all that amazing, but as far as we've come, redundancy has been a hot thing for past who knows how many, I'd say probably for the past decade, if not longer. There definitely should be a way to have redundancy with DIDs or phone numbers. Right now what I do is that if my carrier goes down, each carrier I have set up that if they can't terminate a call for whatever reason, automatically fails from the carrier's end to a completely different number on a different network. So that's a kind of a workaround for now. But otherwise, no, there's really no way to just have failover at the DID level from the carrier. There really isn't.
Yeah.
It's not like your DIDs will spin up somewhere else.
I mean, I don't, like with my SIP providers, I've never really had really sustained outages. So I don't know. I can't complain a lot about it. But still, you know, if I had a call center or something like that, I would, you know, that'd be a lot more problematic, I would think.
Yeah.
Of course, you'd probably have like an 800 number that pointed, you know, internally. That way you could sort of swing that a little bit more gracefully. So I don't know. There's workarounds. It's just.
That's all you have for now is workarounds. But I mean, thank God nothing really has ever gone down that bad. I jumped off a level 3 before they had their super massive outage. I think it was like, what, 3 years now? All their phone stuff went down, which was really, really bad. At least in, everywhere they went down. That was really a catastrophe. I should probably post the Google article about it.
Oh, I felt that one. We were rocking a level 3 SIP trunk, and we went down on that one.
Ooh. Yeah, I was already off level 3 at that point because I saw the writing on the wall. But, yeah, whatever. Yeah. Shit happens. Like, what do you do when a giant conglomerate like level 3 goes down? What do you tell your customers? Hey, level 3 is down. They're like, what do I care?
Who?
Yeah,
who's
exactly.
Level 3?
Which level? What?
Well, it's like that CenturyLink outage we talked about last time that was so massive that the FCC is actually investigating it, right? That it's, you know, one of the major global internet providers tanks, you know, I mean, it's, and we had to explain to customers, no, like in the data center, we had to say, no, we're not actually having problems. It's just such a massive widespread issue that it's likely a chunk of your customers actually hang off of this provider. Thus, you know, you're going to feel it.
So they don't care. They don't understand that.
No, it's, yeah, I mean, exactly. You know, you're providing them a service and it's not 100% what they're anticipating. So, but it's,
yeah.
It's still a reason, you know, that's like if you rent a gas station and then there's a fuel shortage, you know, people aren't going to necessarily scream at you, why don't you have gas? They understand that. But, you know, like, I guess.
No, but with the internet, there's some magic stupidity that goes along with it. So
it's just magic. It's that in the cloud. You know how that stuff works.
It's a series of tubes.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Speaking of which, I got a book recommendation. Tubes is a great book to read or listen to. It's a book about the internet, and it's a guy that basically went around and researched the internet from its beginnings, and he talks about it, and he talks a lot about peering and Equinix and AM6 and DKIX and all that stuff. About
wow.
All that.
That sounds like a super snoozer. Was it actually interesting?
Oh,
it is
Andrew
super interesting
Blum.
For if you're in this industry.
Does it involve Al Gore as part of the people that started the internet?
Well, he does touch on that subject, but but basically that's like two sentences in the book. He basically says this is why Al Gore claims to have created the internet.
Wasn't he also bored that gave funding that actually helped?
Think it turned it from the ARPANET from being basically military to or educational to being open to the public. Maybe I'm not entirely sure.
All right.
I'm curious. Does it talk about the most hacked, top secret, what is it called, project ever, when they were creating the B-52 stealth bomber? That
no,
was
I
an IP based.
I haven't gotten that far in the book to hear about anything like that, but it, you know, he doesn't really talk about the hacking side of things. He talks about like the first router and how big it was and how they hooked it up with telephone lines and, you know, that kinds of stuff and how exchanges started in May East and May West and all that stuff. So
that's cool.
Equinix, how Equinix started. So
I'm looking at the next entry and I see Mike put on his troll face. It's he says certifications, and it's a link to a picture that says network certifications don't teach carrier skills. Change my mind. That's very cute, Mike.
It there's two of them.
I refrained from saying the other one.
Okay. There's a second one. Feel free to check it out.
So is that what you really believe, that certifications don't teach skills?
No. They are enterprise focused. They're not carrier focused. There's no Cisco carrier focused Of course, you know, certifications.
There's no track for carrier focused.
Yeah, like, you know,
I think they call it like, service provider. Cisco's certification track for carriers.
You just named it, Greg? Is it what it's called?
Yeah, it's called service provider.
Wouldn't that be called the CCIE?
Not necessarily. No. There's a track for service providers.
Because there's a guy I know that he's got two CCIEs and some other C something E. And he went looking for more service provider carrier stuff and was disappointed by what Cisco had. And apparently nobody else really has anything either.
What exactly are you saying they're lacking? Why don't we start with that? Because I'm hearing what you guys are saying, but I'm not quite grasping where the lack of something is.
Sure, yeah. And so, you know, they'll teach you what BGP is and how to configure it, but BGP for, you know, Bob's Discount Tire Company is an entirely different scale of BGP to master than BGP for level 3.
All right. Well, the way I look at it is, how many enterprise admins would you say are out there in the world? Let's just put a number on it. What do you think? 500,000?
A lot. Yeah.
How many carrier admins do you think are out there in the world?
I think it's 1,000-to-1 ratio, probably.
Yeah, that's what I'm saying. So yeah. It makes more. You go where the money's at, right? So if most of the money's in enterprise, you focus most of your attention on that. So I get it.
I got a great idea. Mike, why don't you design a course and teach it?
I don't know that I have that kind of time.
I should play the music from the what is it? The chipmunk, dramatic chipmunk.
Dun, dun, dun. Yeah.
Well, you can't just pose a problem and not a solution.
So you're saying that they don't dive into the flags, the knobs that you can turn to tune the traffic engineering to prefer one carrier over another when you have multiple BGP connections to multiple carriers. That's what you're saying. They don't get to that level.
Yeah, they'll touch on VPLS or the things like that, but you know they won't really dig in. To those weeds because it doesn't apply so much to the enterprise world. Now, you go up to, you know, I think there's hyperscale is the big guys, but web scale guys, hyperscale guys, you know, enterprise, you know, they're not really carriers, but they're, you know, they're kind of a merge of an enterprise and a carrier. You know, they're working that way, but, you know, even, you know, those guys are using some of those technologies in an enterprise, but that's not your typical enterprise focus.
Well, something of note that I've seen myself personally is in most of the enterprise, like when I think of carriers, I'm thinking of like level 3 TW, CenturyLink, the big boys, right? And so when I'm talking to engineers there, they're like either like a transport engineer, so they're just doing, I'll get you from one place to the other, I'll do point to points, I'll do connectivity, or you've got like routing engineers. And I don't know that I've ever talked to like one guy that can do all of it. You know what I mean? So it seems like in the carrier world,
highly specialized.
Yeah. So what we run into, I think, is this bizarre mix of, I mean, shit, dude, the average guy listening to this, not only does he go and do installs, but he's doing the network engineering. He's doing the ISP contracts. He's probably also cleaning the toilets, you know, and he's picking up snacks for the office. You know what I mean? So it's like you literally have to do everything. When you're kind of a smaller WISP sort of thing. And then you look at Miller on top of all that stuff. He's also cleaning the windows and he's installing the servers and he's doing the Ceph installs.
He's licking the windows. That's not the same as cleaning the windows.
It accomplishes the same goal, does it not? I'm just saying.
But then also, you know, kind of a spin on, you know, in Slack there was talk about this a little bit and, you know, and they're, in enterprise, it's a different, generally, it's a different sort of attitude as well, as far as running it, you know, and the processes going into it. You know, if you mean to take down HR, or you take down accounting for something,
oops.
You know, oops, you turn it back on.
You'll live. You know, go for your lunch break, world, come back. Yeah.
That's a problem.
Yeah. My bad, guys. Yeah, but it also seems like an enterprise. The network serves the server guys the users, right? Where in the carrier world, everything else serves the network.
It's ancillary.
Yeah.
So, Mike, I kind of disagree with that last remark of yours. When I was working in the advertising agency, if we took down the creative department, we're literally losing money. So it was very critical to keep those guys working, because that was our cash flow.
It's just like
depends on the company,
yeah,
probably.
Because I've worked for companies too where if you take down the network, then the call center goes down, right? Because they're all VoIP phones. And we literally have people sitting here not being able to do anything. So.
But, you know, in a carrier, you know, that is the product. It's like there is nothing else. The network is the product.
Yeah, that's like when people try and compare real data centers to carrier facilities. You know, when you go to a carrier data center, I mean, it is bare bones. You know, I mean, there's like tumbleweeds blowing through their data centers. You know, that is just an afterthought. They happen to have space to hold their routers and their fiber infrastructure, and you could put crap in there too. So you could tell that they're focused on the network itself.
We were in a level 3 facility, very much like that.
Yeah.
They had 3 cracks in there, and only one of them is operational.
Fully operational. Yep. But
when we moved out, yeah.
But also, if you're in one of those carrier facilities, they have zero visibility into how much power you're using. They're not really tracking the air conditioning very well. Yeah.
Or the cross connects that you might run between the two racks that you have.
Yeah. And like most of them, the level 3 facility next to us in Houston, their check-in, check-out, their security is there's a clipboard sitting in a chair. And as you walk in, you're supposed to write your name on it. And then when you walk out, you're supposed to write that you left. That's a height of security in that facility.
Wow. When I was at level 3 in New York City, the Mondo Condo, as they called it, that was the gateway to Europe at the time. That's when the internet was getting, or internet companies was getting tons of money from the stock market. Just tons. So the security was ridiculous. We had to check in at the front desk, show ID, show the whatever HID card, put in a PIN code to get up to the elevator. The elevator would only bring you to the floor that you're supposed to go to. You couldn't go any other floor. Then when you got to the floor that you're getting to, there is another security guard and another PIN code on the door, and you have to go through the whole process again. Then when you get to your cabinet, there's an HID card you would put on the cabinet door, and then it would pop open this little keypad, and you would have to type in your code again, and then you can open your cabinet. I'm sure that's very different now, but this is going back to 1998. So, yeah, things have changed quite a bit.
That sounds like some of my experiences at some of the other data centers we're in still.
Nice. So,
and if you loiter around too long somewhere where they know you're not supposed to be, someone will just magically come out of nowhere and ask if they can help you.
And if you tailgate through a door, then you get tackled by a security guard. And man, some of the scarier ones are like the short female security guards, dude. Oh. They don't put up with shit. So you see Rebecca at the desk, you don't mess around. You make sure you hit every reader.
That's cute. Well, now the internet companies don't have the money they used to. So I'm sure a lot of that stuff has gone by the side.
For sure. All right. You guys want to do some of the Slack updates, run through some of the stuff we've talked about really quick?
A new icon?
I'm not a big fan. But then again, I don't really care one way or the other about what that looks like. Not that Slack update. I just meant stuff we talked about.
Hey, What about the note I entered on the notes, the line item I entered?
I don't know. Which one is that?
It's the one about because I'm doing a speech on, bursting, bandwidth bursting in Microtech.
We'll read that.
I wanted to know if there
were... Are you talking about the one all the way at the bottom?
Yes, sir.
Well, because we go top to bottom, Dave.
I don't have it open in front of me, man. I'm sick. I couldn't carry the laptop here.
Well, we're getting there. Cool your
horse. Except for when he skips mine.
We'll get ice cream before we go home, Dave. Don't worry. All right. So some Slack updates. The Austin Mum. I was talking about maybe doing a little Brothers Wisp podcast where we get everybody together in a room and then we fight it out. So we just break a pool cue and throw it down, see who comes out. No, actually just to sit around and do kind of one of these with all of
it's
the
It's a glow rod.
Yeah. Yeah. We'll break an Omni in half and then we go ahead. Yeah. No, I thought it'd be pretty cool. Just fishing around to see if anybody was interested, see what the thoughts are.
I like
the LHG idea. As a shield.
God, you're such a nerd. It looks like Andrew Thrift is now prepared to answer all your Fortinet questions. Kid is now an SC for those guys, so jump in there.
Wow.
Ask him all the questions you can. Let's see. Jeremy found some success with receiving and processing his abuse notifications via abuse.io. I guess he's sort of automated that and been able to graph it and stuff. I guess it's working for him.
It's got mail parsing in it, so all those emails that you get for copyright infringement can be sent to it and parsed automatically, and it can integrate with your IPAM to tell you where it was, who it was, that kind of thing. And then also has a ticketing system built into it so that they can come in and log in, and they'll say why this is important, why you shouldn't be doing this, and you know, I promise won't do it again, and then it'll email the person back, the carrier, whoever was making the complaint back.
I just assumed everybody had those routed straight to the recycle bin. So, I don't know. Some people actually care about it, huh?
Yeah. It's an interesting product. That's for sure. Yeah. It's open source, free. So.
That's cool. Let's see. I think this was Thrift. He says MV2 for 802.11c is broken on MikroTik ARM stuff. So, that probably
that's old news,
you should
but
avoid it.
It's good to repeat it.
Yeah. Just so nobody attempts it.
Well, and like I think his point was, it's been broken. They've pointed it out, and MikroTik tried it. It's a little better. They don't really care to do anything more with it.
All right.
So
the consensus is don't run NV2. After 802.11n, don't run NV2. Is that the idea?
It was fine on N, but AC is broken.
Yeah.
I think it's. Don't know the specifics, but I know that combination of ARM, AC, and NV2 is not a fun one.
Gotcha. So just avoid it until further notice. Let's see. Thrift is pushing to standardize the API with MikroTik. So if you have support for that, drop them an email at support@mikrotik.com and let them know.
If he was talking about getting them to do something different, is that what it was? Or was it just...
I think there's like an RFC he's trying to get them to follow, right?
They obviously have an API, but apparently they just kind of do whatever they want. If they change it, there's no versioning, there's none. It just kind of...
Your app breaks.
Yeah, your stuff
and it
could
be different, break across different versions. So if you were a company writing something that interfaced with multiple MikroTiks across your clients, you could run into all kinds of compatibility problems.
Yeah, or say you had a product that depended on that API to be consistent. That could be very problematic for your business.
Yeah.
Let's see. We had a little chat about 802.11 beaconing with additional SSIDs, and we've got a link that kind of goes to an SSID overhead calculator. The idea being when you run multiple SSIDs, those SSIDs have to send out beacons, right? And so if you put a whole bunch of those in the air, it can slow things down, especially in like a high dense environment. We've got a lot of those APs that are all sending out beaconing. It can eat up a lot of airtime.
True. Like, two, three, four are probably okay. 20 is probably a problem.
Could be problematic.
Josh Gray has this pretty cool script that he gave me. It's every single open access point name like in America. So like if you're in a McDonald's, it'll have like the McDonald's access point name, the SSID name, and Starbucks, and like every hotel chain, and like everywhere and anywhere that has free Wi-Fi, we have to connect to their network. So it's kind of like a really cruel thing to do is you go around with a little hap AC into like a little public area where there's a lot of teenagers that don't have data plans or whatever. And then you turn it on and it's broadcasting every single one of those SSIDs that these kids have previously connected to. It'll try to connect to that SSID, which goes nowhere.
You put a hotspot page up there with a message, right?
I never actually ran it, but it's literally like a few hundred SSIDs, and I still have yet to do it. But I should do it when I go to my my wife's nephew's college. He goes to Nevada. What is it? Nevada State, yeah. NVU or something, and just turn it on in the dorm.
Well, you could probably do that with a WAP LTE and just charge a whole lot of money for people to connect with a hotspot.
They won't pay their students, but it'll screw up their connections and they'll flip out and they'll call 911. Oh, remember when Facebook went
down? That's down. Yeah, CenturyLink's down, so sorry.
All right, this next one, Miller thought I should pull this off, but somebody was talking about how they were having problems with an optic linking up, and so I looked up the specs on the optic, and it looked like the receive signal they were getting might be a little too hot, right? It was coming in too strong. So I suggested wrap the fiber around a pencil a few times, and apparently Miller's come out with the same advice at one point. Not that you should leave it, but it will cause some attenuation.
Bend and sensitive fiber, it's not as effective as normal fiber. So,
but none of us can afford that stuff.
Oh, like all we use is bend and sensitive fiber now.
I know, that's all we use as well these days. But theoretically, if you've got crappy fiber, you can wrap it around and it'll attenuate a little bit, and it'll at least show you whether attenuating the signal a bit. Obviously, attenuation is where you lessen the signal, so it'll show you if maybe the optic is just running a little too hot. And then you can buy things called attenuators that you can plug in that will actually knock the signal down for you.
My recommendation was to just go into the router or switch and look at the stats, and it'll tell you how much is too hot, and it'll tell you what it's receiving, so then you know before you go there.
MikroTik doesn't tell you how much. Cisco does, so.
MikroTik doesn't have all the DOM information in there?
It has a lot of DOM information, but it doesn't tell you what is too hot or what is too, cold. Huh.
And the reason why wrapping it around a pencil is so that it has to, like, the light has to bounce up and down.
It's the sharp bends in the fiber makes it start losing signal kind of as it curls around. Okay. But yeah, the bend insensitive stuff, it's really cool. If you ever play with it, you can go ham with it and you won't see
easy bend
change.
Easy bend fiber is wonderful. So
it tighten a knot and just keeps.
Can hang off of it, swing.
Not that we'd recommend that, obviously, but
no. But we run that to our sickly radios.
You guys ever get stabbed with a piece of fiber? Like stab your finger with a piece of fiber if it's like ever bare?
Nah.
I was gonna say, like, what kind of neighborhood are you in where you're getting robbed by
high-tech neighborhood?
That's the way we
give me all your
come
bits.
Correct.
So maybe slash you with my ribbon fiber.
Yeah. No, I've never done that. But they say that's why you're supposed to wear safety glasses, right? So you don't get a little piece of that in your eye.
Yeah.
I heard if it gets in your bloodstream, you're done, dude. If a piece breaks off in your bloodstream, you're finished. Gets to your brain. Causes an aneurysm.
Fatality.
You're done. Death by fiber.
That sounds fun. Way to end on a good note there, Dave. Let's see. One other thing, Thomas wants Unimus feedback. He says I'm sort of paraphrasing here, so it's not actually him saying it. He says if you aren't using it, what are your reasons for using it, right? He's not the guy sitting at the table saying change my mind. He's just honestly looking for open feedback on, hey, if Unimus is a product that you find interesting but you aren't using it, why not? So that they can sort of address that. Help this kid.
Oh, I can answer that. I can answer that.
So I can tell you, I've paid for a license, but I rebuilt the server that it was on, and I never reinstalled it, and I need to get back around to it, so that's why I'm not using it. Why aren't you using it?
Greg, you are a terrible friend.
I paid for it. He got my money.
Oh. Well, then I guess you're a great friend.
You
pay for it and not use it.
I've just been overwhelmed with all the things I'm doing, so never got around to actually starting to set things up. But I have an account, and just never had the time.
I know. We need to be able to we need to be able to pay Thomas too. We need to pay him like $60 and he'll install it for us on our servers.
Dude, just clone him, man. Clone him.
Well, I mean, at one point he was talking about a cloud version that was hosted and it would just...
Does he want to take on that liability?
He hasn't done it yet, so I guess not yet.
Yeah, I can only imagine that getting hacked or, I mean...
Well, Microtik's got kind of the cloud backup feature now in the beta version at least, so, I mean, go for it.
Wait, explain that? What is that again?
The Microtik cloud backup feature, it backs up a binary copy of your config to the cloud.
Oh, the binary copies suck.
Well,
sorry.
It's better than nothing, and I guess.
No other way of saying that. I'd rather a text backup. You could at least open the file, read it, pull out the lines that you need, put it to a different version router, different model router of Microtik.
I can't help but think how juicy a target that would be. You know, like just think of the thousands and thousands of configurations you'd be able to get because you'd have their IP address and maybe some indication of what version they're on and what exploits to use against those versions. And I don't know. It's interesting. I'm assuming there won't be any passwords in that cloud backup, right, Mel?
Yeah, it probably hides sensitive and it's probably encrypted when it goes up.
Yeah. Still, it'd be interesting.
Hopefully. But who was it? Wait, who was it that had? It was one of the guys on the Brothers Wisp. I think it was the guy from Thrift. I think Thrift has some company where he made a website and you can upload the binary backup and it'll actually show you every single password that has ever been configured in there, even if that user has been deleted. And I'm talking about admin logins, not like, you know, user PPTP or, you know, any type of PPP connection password. It had every password I ever configured on a router.
Was that just older versions? Because you can't do that anymore, right?
Yeah, that's an older version.
Oh, I haven't tried it recently, so I don't know.
Yeah, they fixed that recently.
Oh, I like that feature.
Yeah, because people used to always say, hey, I've lost my password. How do I get it back? And hold the reset button and plug the power into it. That's how you get back. Yeah, so do something like Miller said, you know, do the rancid integration, all that stuff, or hit the easy button and use Unimus. Anyway, Dave says, what bandwidth bursting be used for other than online video streaming services in effort to improve end user experience in a practical sense?
Why you got to say it like that? Because that's the way you wrote it.
Yeah, you wrote it. I didn't realize.
I don't know, man. I told you. I'm sick and I'm. I am in so much. I'm taking some pretty wild medications to get over this damn cold. It sucks. And this is the better part of the cold, believe it or not.
Gotcha.
So I'm not all
sick. So you're on Molly?
But
I get you. A little ecstasy. I don't know that that's necessarily good for congestion.
Oh, he's in California, so pot's legal.
Yeah, right. Take pot for a cold.
Takes pot for cough a cold. Cough up your lungs. He takes it.
I hear it's medical now.
For a stub toe, here, for a paper cut.
Yeah, it's medicine.
Yeah, for sure.
Paper cut. Yeah.
I was reading something about they were talking about the medical marijuana and the requirements to get it. And they were saying, you know, kind of towards the top of the list, they were talking about like cancer, you know, and maybe like glaucoma, things, you know, that actually. And then as you get towards the bottom of the list, it's like anxiety, and then one was like writer's block, and so it's like
loss of appetite.
Yeah, it's basically
temporary eye blindness, boredom. That's what I hear.
Paranoia. Yeah. That's a little scary one, because if you smoke too much, man, you get scared.
Well, we wouldn't know because it's not legal in our states. So,
okay, come over to California. I'll show you how to get scared.
We have bad neighborhoods I can drive through. I have no problems figuring out how to get scared.
Miller's trying to find a way to say that he wants to smoke pot without saying that he wants to smoke pot.
No. I was trying to find a way of saying, you know, what were you actually going to scare us with?
I'll pull down my pants.
A detachable one is more what I'm worried about.
Yeah, I got some awards.
All right.
Anyway, so
talk about your bandwidth thing with the bursting used for video streaming services.
All right, good.
Where are you going with this?
Okay, so bandwidth bursting. I'm just trying to get some other ideas on where you could use bandwidth bursting aside from the obvious, okay, where, you know, Netflix and Amazon Video and all these streaming services that are in high def need to buffer until it actually starts playing the media. So until the buffer reaches a certain point, it won't play media. Well, that's where you would use bandwidth bursting as an ISP. You know, you would want to give someone a temporary, you know, what would you call it, a power up, in so you could download bursts, you could burst and download things a lot quicker, like things that buffer. We know that, but what about other applications? Is, I mean, I'm trying to think of other scenarios that you might use bandwidth bursting where it would be useful.
So I know what you're talking about with like video. A lot of the major video providers have sort of accounted for this now. So whenever you're streamed, because you've probably noticed it on YouTube, it'll be really crappy quality at first. And then as it does buffer, it'll improve the quality. That way there's not that lag to actually play. I think Netflix does the same thing too. Where were you going with that, Miller?
Well, I was going to say probably about 3 or 4 years ago, there was a presentation at WISPAPALOOZA or WISPA America where someone would artificially limit the speed of Netflix streams only to save on bandwidth, because it would try to burst, it would hit that cap, and then would never try to go past that cap after it established that. So by actually allowing it to burst and then cutting it back down, you actually kill the person's stream, and you make it actually not buffer as well when you do that. So Netflix expects to have a certain amount of bandwidth and always have that bandwidth, and by implementing bursting on Netflix streams, you actually hurt the user experience.
Right, because generally bursting, well, like I'm from the ISP side, right? You let them rubber band up for X amount of time, and then you bring them back down into profile.
The only thing I could really think of is speed tests.
That's it, but that's like dirty.
Cheating on speed.
Yeah.
Well, that's why there's that right. asterisk, and it says up to X speed.
Oh, yes. Yes, I have dealt with that with my ISP, let me tell you.
Everybody has, yeah.
Yeah. So any thoughts? Anything? Nothing?
Just for general purpose, I mean, it's getting not to be that big of a deal now when standard connections are, you know, 300 megs. But
you never get that, though.
But you know, in a situation where it's only a 10 or 20 meg package, if you had a 50 meg burst, you know, you could still have a really snappy experience, but then they're limiting you from sitting there on BitTorrent all day at 50 megs, you know.
Well, hold on. You could always really be granular about what you burst, and that's when mangling comes into place, but I'm not going to talk about that right now. I like your take on it, Miller, where you said, you know, Netflix is expecting this much. So if you burst, you're actually hurting the user.
Yep.
That's good info. I didn't even know that, because honestly, I don't even watch TV.
Well, I don't know too many people that watch TV, but a lot of people watch Netflix. And you were saying you get 300 from your house. I have probably like a 400 meg package or something like that. It's whatever the basic is here. But all I ever do is just watch Netflix and some YouTube videos at home. If I'm doing downloading, I'm doing it from the data center and stuff like that.
I have 100 megabits, and I never get that much. I mean, especially at night.
I have gig service here from Fios. It's 980 down and 860 up or something like that.
Yeah, whatever. Gig. Just gig at the house.
And day-to-day usage, you never really hit it, you know. So.
Obviously, yeah. Honestly, with all the monitoring I do against all my customers, you typically don't see anybody, you know, peaking anything above like 50 megs for a standard office. You know, I have an office that does video production, and they kind of do push bandwidth. They're the only ones that actually sustain like 100 megabit all day long.
We've got a print press company. They actually take photos from online and then print them and send them out on our network. And they do quite a bit sustained all the time. So.
Yeah, there's a handful here and there, but for the most part, I haven't seen anybody really, you know, and usual normal, you know, offices, I haven't seen them use that much anyway, but
yeah,
interesting.
I've seen like
I'm surprised
bursting too. It just sort of popped in my head, like in, networks where you're the service provider and you allow customers to burst, sometimes you'll get, somebody that's doing BitTorrent or, they're doing that video streaming and their VoIP calls go to pot while they're doing that, right? Because it's just consuming so much of the bandwidth. And if you are allowing it to burst and buffer, you don't want to buffer those VoIP packets, right?
Hold on. Yeah, you're talking about, you're thinking of the traditional way of doing bursting where you apply it to a whole customer's connection. And that obviously isn't going to work.
Yeah, doing some queue.
And bursting would, yeah, obviously. I mean, all my customers, I do some pretty extensive queuing and prioritizing. I should probably show
you.
You're
talking in the customer router itself, right?
Yeah.
I'm just talking about, like, if you take one step into the ISP, like on the ISP side, if you're doing some bandwidth buffering and stuff like that, it can be detrimental to the customer's traffic as well. But if you're doing it in the router itself, like I am the customer and I'm doing my own bandwidth stuff. I mean, you can get very granular, like you said. So you can say, hey, all the VoIP stuff, just blast right by the buffers. You know it's going to get priority and things like that. So be sure not to queue that junk up.
Well, you want to prioritize where the prioritization needs to happen. So typically that's going to be at the customer. The only time I could see that being useful anywhere other than the customer is something like a WISP, where they have these wireless backhauls. What am I saying? No, that wouldn't be for bursting. I'm thinking of prioritization. So forget about prioritization, but bursting. All right. So I guess, my speech is going to be pretty damn useless.
Well, no, it's just like once you get into the ISP, you could start getting granular and trying to pick out their traffic, but then that gets a lot more taxing on the ISP's equipment, right? And you can only go so far down that rabbit hole. And then, you know, you could be accused of manipulating their traffic, right? And you want to be net neutral.
No. It's not manipulating. Well, it's not.
Isn't that dead?
I guess.
Super dead.
Yeah, I guess you could think of it as manipulating traffic, but not in a malicious way, in a more efficient way. Because if you start dropping, and I'm talking about prioritization, not bursting anymore. But if you want to give TCP acknowledgments high priority, that's a good thing. Because if you start dropping packets because you've maxed out your bandwidth, the last thing you want to do is drop TCP acknowledgments because then it's just going to retransmit the same data. So give that a higher priority.
Yeah.
Same thing with DNS.
Could be a slippery slope though, right? So say BitTorrent is negatively impacting everybody's experience, so you just start kind of throwing that stuff in the trash.
No, that will fall on its own face because it would... You allow every other type of protocol to do a maximum download or upload of what the customer's line is provisioned for, but then you give guaranteed amounts of bandwidth for every such other protocol.
Right, but then you're playing God. You're picking and choosing what's better than other things. So, I mean, to me, this is sort of fundamentally why people were saying that net neutrality, it needed to be there, you know, that, you know, nobody needed to be able to manipulate traffic. But then you look in a WISP network where, you know, it's usually lower bandwidth. So those backhauls aren't always as capable of supporting the load that you need it to. So, you know what, you can improve the overall experience, but you have to tweak things sometimes to do that. So I think most people just don't look at it from the other side, right?
I guess
it's perspective.
I think for backhauls, it's very important to do prioritization. Because I can't tell you how many times WISP have oversaturated their backhauls or they get a shit connection and all of a sudden they have half the bandwidth they used to.
Or say, for example, they've got a primary link and a redundant link, and the redundant link has 3/4 the throughput of the primary link, you know, and the primary link goes down. Well, you know, they need to do some heavy QoS to make sure everything keeps trucking through the link, you know, so it's stuff like that.
Yeah. Yeah. Damn, I'm pretty depressed about this speech I have to give now.
Oh,
back to the drawing board.
I can't change it now. Look, it was either going to be one of two things. It was either going to be a speech on the physics of wireless, which is something that I absolutely love because it so closely ties to ham radio. That sort of technology, it's all about the physics of wireless. But that was going to really take me a long time to put together in a speech that someone that has never heard of wireless can walk out of there understanding the basic fundamentals of wireless technologies and antennas in particular. But I didn't have that much time, especially lately. So I thought a quick one that I could do that I've seen a lot of people struggle with is bursting. Because if you look at the options in MikroTik about bursting, they are pretty they're not very user friendly or intuitive. Just say it that way.
I'm hearing a lot of excuses out of you, Dave. All I know is you're sitting here for an hour talking to a bunch of idiots that you could be working on your antenna theory presentation.
Man, I love doing this stuff. I love doing this stuff, and I still really do love reading about, you know, ham radio technology, which is really just wireless technology in general. I'm actually building a J-pole. Not tonight. I'm not up to it, but sometime in the near future, just as a hobby. Anyway.
You could talk about the new bucket stuff they added in latest versions.
Token buckets?
No, not the token buckets, but they added some kind of let me look at a MikroTik real quick.
Something bucket. I know I've seen a bucket size.
Yeah, bucket size stuff that they have in there. Bucket ratios, bucket sizes, that stuff. That's a pretty new thing. A lot of people know how to make use of that.
Well, is that really to do with bursting, or does that have to do with prioritizing and queuing?
You can tie it all together, brother.
Yeah, I know.
Make put a big bow on it.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Take all of it and put it in a bag.
It's all related, QoS and bursting and all of that.
That's true. I was going to cover QoS, but briefly in the speech, but the bucket size, yeah. That one's an interesting one because there's not too much good documentation out there about what exactly the bucket size is or what the tokens are. It was described very, very briefly to me by Giannis, who is the guy at MikroTik that I guess you would say his department or whatever it is, his focus is bandwidth management. And he said it's like a token. Think of it like bandwidth is the way he described it is bandwidth is a... And he's going to kill me if I miss...
Because he's listening to this, so just get ready.
I know he is. You know what? I'm just not going to say anything.
No, it's too late. It's too late. You're already too far in.
All right. He said that the bandwidth is kind of like you go to an amusement park and you go on these like rides, you know, like the train ride. What is it called? I don't know. A roller coaster. And you have these lanes and then you have tokens to get onto the train and... Something like that. He's gonna fucking kill me, man.
The train. What is it called? A roller coaster.
You can't board the roller coaster without a token. So, whatever.
Oh my goodness.
He's gonna fucking kill me.
You have the best analogies I've ever heard, Dave.
I'm so screwed up right now. I'm like on Robitussin and Zyrtec and a bunch of other crap.
So you're drinking Scissor, huh? That sounds sweet. Let's see.
Purple drink in the house.
Purple drink. we're at an hour 18. Let's put a bow on top before Dave gets real weird on us. So
the meds are kicking in.
Yeah, man. We need to up his dosage. One or the other. Miller from Virginia. If you were so inclined to have people contact you, I don't know if you want them to or not. How would they go about doing that?
A blog that was just most recently updated.
Booyah! Which is
dynstatic.net, dynstatic.net.
Killer.
Good way. Or Facebook. I don't really get on Facebook.
I don't either. That's why.
Cesspool.
I never tell anybody to do the Facebook thing because I just avoid it most of the time. All right, Mikey, if people are going to get a hold of you out on the interwebs, how are they going to do that?
I'm busy. Leave me alone.
Oh, he's back to I'm busy. Leave me alone.
He prefers plain text emails only.
He prefers all his communication in memes. So,
nice.
Mime types.
Oh, mime types. My bad. Maymays, as they're called by the kids these days. Facebook.com/TheBrothersWisp. All the good stuff. That's Mikey down there. He's doing all that good stuff. And then Slack. He is very active on the Slack group. So, jump in there.
Slack group is probably the best way to get a hold of any of us or any of the other patrons.
Yeah. Miller especially likes it when you slide into his Slack DMs, so get on that. Dave from LA, if people are going to get a hold of you, how do they do that?
Just send me an email, david@pennytone.com.
Okay.
That's it.
Yeah, don't call him, though. Don't call him and leave him weird ASMR messages.
I got a weird voice right now, so I can't even, I can barely speak. It sucks. I can't even yell, which is something I love doing.
You're so adorable. All right. If you want to get a hold of me, gregsoul.com. I occasionally answer emails and occasionally put up blog posts. I'm not at 976 days. We can't all be overachievers like Miller, but I'm pretty close to that, I think. Also,
976 days of what?
Between his posts.
It's the last time I updated my blog.
Oh, no fapping? What?
All right. Okay. So if you have any questions, comments, we want to hear them. If you have anything you'd like us to talk about, contact us at thebrotherswisp.com. If you want to become a patron, help support what we do here, I can't imagine why anybody would. You can go to patreon.com/thebrotherswisp. That actually gets you access to the Little Brothers Wisp Slack, which all of us are a member of. We were actually about 80 strong now. And a lot of good civil discourse in there. A lot of good questions asked and answered. There is no such thing as a dumb question. We get everything from beginners to stuff on the next level that only Andrew Thrift and Miller and a couple other people understand. So just way light years beyond me. So get in there and get your voice heard. Also, I'm still waiting on people to do your five tips. You ding dongs right here, the three I'm staring at, you, none of you guys have done your five tips, so we need to do that thing. Hit me offline.
All right,
five,
I'll do it.
Five tips.
I don't even know what you're talking
about.
Just
come up with your five tips for people in the industry, and then we record them and then just put it up as little side notes. How are you? Do you not read the Slack? Get in the Slack. Get on my level, bro. Anyway, thank you guys.
Oh, I know what you're talking about. I just wanted you to explain it to all the other listeners.
You're the worst. But you're also the best sometimes. All right. Thank you guys for listening. And thank you guys for showing up. And we will see you next time.
We talk about equipment and methodology. So sit back and start learning. Lighting up the tower so people can start searching. Shooting up the web in neighborhoods, net surfing. We got horrible jokes. We're loud and annoying. But we're informative facts. We're not disappointing. Just give us a listen. Because fun is the mission. I'm telling you, you don't know what you are missing. Ideas and some good comedy given. If you missed the show already, don't worry. You're forgiven. We'll be right back.